All right, I will say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. Baruch Hashem, a lot of work today. Beautiful, beautiful work today. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Shvat, Mrs. Selma Wolf, for dedicating Ovid Shimmer Joshua's this month with immense gratitude for the Refuah Shem Hashem and the merit of Refuah Shimmer for all of those in need, in the schus of our brave soldiers, and the merit Hashem in the schus of the return of each of our hostages. Our week of learning sponsors, Ken and Dina Lieble, in the merit of the safe return of their son, Aaron Daniel Ben Frumadina and his entire pluga from Gaza. Emir Tzashem, Aaron Daniel and all of his fellow soldiers should be successful in all of their missions. And Emir Tzashem come back to their mishpachos b'shalom and b'karov. To thank our week of learning sponsors, Derek and Lauren Fine, in memory of Derek's mother, Rachel Bas Shmuel, zichrono levracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshama will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. We dedicate our learning le'ili nishmos, the soldiers who have fallen in battle over the last day, Yitzhar Hafman, Yuval Nir, Gavriel Shani, and Natser Simchi. And of course, we dedicate all the Maseches Baba Kama, Le'ilui Nishmas, Master Sergeant Elio Michal, Harush Hashem Yikom Demo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of these precious neshamas will have an aliyah and their families a nechama. But say with that, let us begin. So we have an incredible, incredible daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Tzadik Beis. Hopefully, again, you saw, I apologize, I sent out the remainder of daf Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis. I posted it on the WhatsApp chat. But it's okay, even if you didn't get to do it beforehand today, it's a little bit of a self-contained 20-minute shir. We are picking up at the Mishnah on 92A, Tzadik Beis Amud Aleph. And with that, let us begin. I will say, really an incredible, I'm sorry, just over here. Good. Incredible, incredible Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Afa pi shu no sin lo. We'll say, even though you pay someone damages, remember again, we've been speaking about all the various categories of damages. See, even though you pay someone damages, in nimchal ad shirakesh mimeno, ultimately again, you are not forgiven for your damages until you request forgiveness from the individual whom you damaged. Shneemar, the ata hashiv eishes aish. So remember again, it's talking about by Avram and Avimelech. We'll see exactly what the proof from that particular pasuk is. But again, the idea of Mishnah highlighting the concept that even though you pay someone back money, unless of course you go ahead and you ask for forgiveness, you are not forgiven. Conversely, how do we know that if you ask for forgiveness, but the person doesn't forgive you, how do we know that such a person is called cruel? So we'll say, so this is actually a very beautiful idea. So on one hand, we see that we know the story of Avimelech, right? Avraham Avinu goes to Gerar because of famine. He goes to Gerar. Sarah is taken by Avimelech, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu visits a terrible plague upon the entire household of Avimelech. Avimelech realizes what's going on over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him. He returns Sarah to Avram, and ultimately, again, he is healed. He and his entire household are healed. So the Gemara says, interestingly enough, we're going to see the first part. Right? So the lesson number one is that if you damage someone, even if you pay them back, and even in this case, Avimelech returned Sarai to Avraham, nevertheless, you still have to ask for forgiveness. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that if you were wronged by someone, and then the person who wronged you asked for forgiveness, you have to forgive. You have to forgive. And if you refuse to forgive, ultimately, again, you are called the cruel and indifferent person. We'll say it's a tremendous, tremendous yisod. In other words, I have a right to be upset when someone wrongs me, but when they apologize to me, I really have a moral obligation to forgive them. Again, this is assuming that the apology is a genuine one, but I have an obligation to forgive them. So the Gemara says, "Ha'omer sime es enai kata es yadi shaver es ragli chayiv." Shabbos, we watch this. Reuven comes over to me, and Reuven says to me, "Do me a favor, blind my eye, cut off my arm, right, or break my leg." So Reuven's inviting me to do this to him. Right, he's telling me to do it to him, and I do it chayiv. Chayiv, I'm liable for that. I'm liable for damaging him. Amanas liftar, what happens if Reuven says, do these things to me, blind my eye, break my arm, right, break my leg, and he says to me, But don't worry, I'm freeing you from all liability. What's the halacha? Chayiv. I'm still chayiv. You can't injure or harm another individual. Kara esk susi, shavar esk hadi, chayiv. Well, see what happens if Reuven says to me, do me a favor, come over to me, and rip my clothing, or break my utensils, and I do it. What's the halacha? Chayiv. I'm responsible. Amanas liftar, what happens if he says, do me a favor, do these things, on the condition, ultimately, that you will be potter, then ultimately, potter. So mostly we see this interesting distinction between visiting physical harm upon a person versus damaging their property. Someone asks me to physically harm them, even if they say that they explicitly exempt me from any liability, ultimately I'm still chayiv. Somebody asks me to go out and damage their property, and they exempt me from liability, and I do it, I am exempt. Incredible. This last case is interesting. We'll have to think about what this means. Right? Reuven comes over to me. Reuven says to me, do me a favor. Go and rip Shimon's clothing. But don't worry, you'll be potter, right? So Reuven's exempting me from liability for damage done to Shimon. Whether it's for Shimon's person or Shimon's property, ultimately, again, I'm going to be chayiv. Incredible. So let's analyze a lot. This Gemara is chock full of incredible and beautiful life lessons. Tan Rabbanon, kol elu sha'amru d'me boshto, avat saro afilu hevi kol eli nevios or nevios sheba olam inim chalo ad shivakesh mimeno. So remember again that halacha lemaisa, all of these cases we have to pay boshes, right? We're speaking about the payment for humiliation. So understand that when it comes to tsar, remember I'm going to say payment. So payment for tsar is payment for pain and suffering. So halacha lemaisa, for tsar, even though there is a monetary amount that is assigned to that, at the end of the day, Rashi says over here, kol ilu sha'amru sela mana masayim dalneos d'me boshes, aval tsar shedoig al boshto in nimchalo. So I'll say this is interesting. So remember, we ascribed financial amounts to boshes, to humiliation. We also went ahead and assigned financial amounts to tsar. But tsar also has a cognitive component. When you injure someone, ultimately, again, there is an element of tsar. What's tsar? So tsar is a person worries about the humiliation that their injury is going to cause. Now, there's also a physical part of tsar, right? But the idea over here is all of that is not rectified until you literally go and you ask forgiveness from the individual. Even if you bring, right, all of the most beautiful animals as compensation, you are not forgiven until you request forgiveness. Shenemar, hashev eshes ha'ish kinavihu v'ispala ba'adcha. So remember again, Hashem tells Avimelech, after Avimelech took Sarah, he says to Avimelech, return this married woman to her husband. Why? Because her husband is a prophet and he will daven on your behalf. So I don't understand. The Ashes Navi Bayaduri, Ashes Achalo Bayaduri. So because Sarah was the wife of a prophet, that's why you have to return her. But had he taken a woman who wasn't the wife of a prophet, there wouldn't be an obligation to return her. They'll say, first white line, what does that mean? I'm going to show my Nachmani, I'm going to be honest, son. Hashev Eishes HaIshmi Kamakom. Obviously, if a man takes a married woman, you have to return her regardless. Udika Amra Tagoi Gam Sadik Taro. Now remember again, Avimelech, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu confronts him by what he did, Avimelech gets on the defensive a little bit. He says, one second. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are you going to go ahead and punish the innocent together with the wicked? I didn't do anything. After all, again, I asked, is she married? Is she not married? And remember, this is Avram and Sarai both saying that they're brother and sister. Halohu amar li achosihi. Remember, Avram told me that she was his sister. Vihi gam hi amra achihu. Ultimately, again, and remember, Sarai also told me that Avram was her brother. To which ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, most is incredible, Navihu. You know, Avram is a Navi. Now, what does it mean, is a Navi? Ukvar Limi, and I both say, now, interestingly enough, in this capacity, Avram Avinu being referred to as a Navi is not as much about his prophetic ability as much as it is that a Navi was a role model, and a Navi was a teacher, and a Navi was someone who espoused wisdom. So Avram Avinu, in his capacity as a Navi, had taught people, Ukvar Limi, Achsinoi Shebaliir, so we'll say when his visitor comes to the city, Al Iske Achilo Ushtia Sholin also, so we'll say, Al Iske Ishto Sholin also. So we'll say, so remember again, Avraham Avinu was a Navi in that he was a Rebbe. And what did he teach? What was his primary thing that he taught as a Rebbe? Hachnasas Arachim. And one of the things that Avraham Avinu had tried to convey ultimately to all of the nations around him is that when a visitor comes to your land, what do you do? What do you do? You ask him about, do you have a place to eat? Do you have a place to drink? What don't you ask him? What don't you ask him? Who's that woman with you? Right? Who's the woman with you? That's not proper etiquette. That's not proper etiquette. And Avraham Avinu, again, had tried to instill that within all of the nations around him. The Gemara says, So the point over here is that ultimately, again, Hashem was telling Avimelech, I understand you didn't do anything wrong on a technical level, but why did you even take this woman? Why was that your first series of questions? After all, Kinovihu, why did you not follow the tutelage, right? The chinuch that Avraham Avinu had tried to instill in everyone all around him. We'll say the Gemara says, Mikan leben Noach shenerag shahayelo lomod velo lamad. We'll say, from here you see that a ben Noach is held responsible for not having learned information. In other words, a ben Noach cannot plead ignorance. Why a ben Noach has an obligation? A ben Noach does not have all that much responsibility. Because he doesn't have all that much responsibility, he's held absolutely liable for not learning the things that he should have learned. Incredible. So Rabbi will say, so this is lesson number one. So lesson number one is that halacha l'maisa, in addition, when you wrong someone, in addition to actually like righting the wrong, like for example, Avimelech returning Sarai, like Reuven paying the money for damages to Shimon, there's an obligation to ask for forgiveness. Rabbi will say, I'll just point out to her something interesting. The obligation to ask for forgiveness. Why? Why is that, right? In other words, I wrong someone, I make the wrong right. I pay money, I return the object, or Avimelech returns Sarah. So why the need to ask forgiveness? Remember again, this actually ties back a little bit to what we're learning in the Chassidus Chabur lesson and Sav Zeres in the Piyajetzna. But I'll say, people often think that asking for forgiveness is for the benefit of the victim, of the aggrieved party. It's not necessarily so. Sometimes asking for forgiveness, I will say, is a necessary step that I, the perpetrator, have to do. See, I will say, it's easy to kind of give money and then just walk away, right? Here's the damages. When you ask for forgiveness, what does that require of you? That requires of you to face the person who you wronged and to acknowledge that you wronged another human being. It's interesting. People always think that forgiveness is about the victim. It is. It's partially about the victim, but it's also about the aggressor, also about the perpetrator. I need to confront the fact that I hurt someone else, and I need to own that. I need to own that. And when I need to face you, and I need to say, I'm sorry, what I've done in that moment is I've acknowledged and I've owned the fact that I have done something to deconstruct another human being. And I can't be a whole person moving forward unless, of course, I take that achrayis. An incredible, incredible idea. The Amar goes back to Ki Atzar. So we'll say now we're going to focus a little bit more on the Avimelech story. Ki Atzar Atzar Hashem. So we'll say, remember again, how is Avimelech and his household, how were they punished? The orifices of their body were closed up. Why does it say atzar atzar? Why the double closing up? One orifice of man was closed up, the ability to emit semen of zera, right, of zera, and by isha too, zera veleda, right, the inability to emit zera and the inability to give birth. Another source that says two orifices were closed up by man, shechva zera ukitanim. Both semen and urine. Shlosha biisha, shichva zera, kitanim veleda. So zera, urine, and ultimately birth. Ravina Amar, shalosh biish, shichva zera, kitanim pitabas. There were three orifices by a man. A man couldn't emit zera, couldn't urinate, and couldn't defecate. Arba biisha, shichva zera, leda, kitanim pitabas. By a woman, again, it was four, the previous three, plus birth. It was a bottom line, it was bad. Right? It was bad, right? That's the takeaway from this. And ultimately, again, this was the punishment of Avimelech. So the Gemara said, Ba'ad kol rechem. So the pasuk says, ultimately again, ba'ad kol rechem, literally again, every womb was closed up. As a result of this plague, even the chickens in Avimelech's home weren't laying their eggs. From where do we know this famous adage that when you daven on behalf of someone and you need that very same thing that you are davening for someone else, then not only is your tefillah answered, right, for you, but your tefillah is answered first. Where do we know that? And most say, now think about this in just a moment. This is an incredible moment of spiritual courage, right? If I need something, but I know my friend that needs it also, and I daven for my friend before I daven for me, that is a moment of incredible vihaftu yachakamocham, setting my own knees on the side in order to daven for someone else. So the Gemara now says, how do you know that if you do that, not only are you answered, but you're answered first? So the Gemara says, "Dichsev v'Hashem." I'm sorry, "V'Hashem shavah shavus Iyov bispalalo ba'ad re'ehu." Because the pasuk says, Hashem went ahead and literally answered Iyov because he davened for his friend. Atar mit mehasim, you say from there. V'ana min mehaka, I'll give you a different source. V'yispalal Avram el Elokim, v'yir pa'elokim es Avimelech ves ishto v'amosav. So we'll say the pasuk says, Avram Avinu davened on behalf of Avimelech, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu healed everyone in Avimelech's household. Uksiv, and the pasuk says, Vashem pakad esara kasher amar. But say in the very next pasuk, what is the very next section, what does it say? Hashem remembered Sarah for childbirth, as he said. So the Gemara says, kasher amar Avram el Avimelech. So it's interesting. The Gemara darshans, what does it mean, kasher amar, as he said? So we often think that it's as HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised. The Gemara Darshan says, no, it's as Avram said on behalf of Avimelech. In other words, because Avram davened on behalf of Avimelech, that the wombs of his household should be opened up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave that very same bracha to Avram Avinu with Sarah Imeinu becoming pregnant. So beautiful. I'm really Rava L'Rava, Bar Mari. So Rava Sidra Bar Mari. Where is that phrase that people say? Where is that, right? That phrase that people say, what's the phrase? Bahadi hutsa laki karba. Sometimes, I'm going to say, when you go out and you uproot the thorns, you uproot the cabbages as well. Meaning what? That sometimes in the course of destroying thorns, which are unnecessary, right, you end up destroying good produce as well. And I will say what this metaphor means. What this metaphor means, Rashi points out over here, is that sometimes the neighbors of a Rasha are punished together with the Rasha himself. Right? So the idea over here is the thorns are the metaphor for the Rasha. The cabbage is the metaphor for the non-Rasha. So sometimes in the uprooting of the thorns, ultimately you destroy the cabbage. Now we'll say, this is what Chazal say, Oy l'Rasha v'oy l'Shcheino. Woe to the wicked person and woe to his neighbors. That being neighbors or connecting yourself with Rishayim sometimes has negative consequences. What is the consequence? Lama terivu elai kulchem pashatem bi nu'um Hashem. So we'll say over here in this pasuk in Yirmiyo, so ultimately again, Lashon is kulchem pashatem bi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, all of you have rebelled against me. So Rashi points out over here, even the prophets were included in this statement. So you say from here, I'll give you a different source. Ad ana me antem lishmar mitzvosai v'sorosai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, in one of those moments where he's disappointed with Klal Yisrael, right, for how long will you refuse to keep my Torah and mitzvos? And included in that phrase were Moshe Aaron. So we'll say again, a tremendous yisod in general. We saw this so many times throughout our journeys in Shas. The idea that so often we allow ourselves to be connected to people who are not the right influence. And we just assume that we could be strong enough to resist the influence. And it's not true. We are impacted and we are impacted, and everything and everyone around us has an impact on us. And ultimately, we don't recognize that if we allow ourselves to be around negative influences, we suffer the same consequences as those very negative influences. The Gemara goes right to only Rava the Rabbah, Bar Marik Siv, Pasuk says, So we'll say this is when Yosef introduces his brothers to Paro. So the pasuk says he took five of his brothers to introduce to Paro. So the Gemara says, "Man ninu chamisha." Which five? Which five did he choose? Amrali Hakin Riyokanan Osan Shuch Bulu Beshemos. Ultimately, again, it's those five. It's those five who Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and repeated their names. Repeated their names in the brachas. Now we'll say those are assumed to be five of the weakest Shvatim. Rashi points out to Verbe Birchas Moshe, Dan, Zvulun, God, Asher, Naphtali. Now, why are their names repeated in the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu? Because again, the assumption is that they were weaker, and therefore again, needed additional bracha. Why does Yosef bring those brothers to Paro? Yosef did not want to bring his strong brothers to Paro. Why? Because Yosef was afraid that if he would do that, then Allah HaMaisa Paro would conscript them to lead the army. Instead, what Yosef kind of wanted to do is put on a little bit of a show of weakness, right, in order that the brothers would not be bothered by Paro. So the Gemara says, one second, so Amar Lei Haki Amar Rabbi Yochanan, also Shalom B'Shemos, Yehuda, Nami Ichpalu Mechbal, but one second, Yehuda's name was also doubled, right? Yehuda's name is also mentioned twice by Moshe Rabbeinu. But yeah, we know that Yehuda was very strong. So what's going on over here? No. Yehuda's name was doubled, right? Was stated twice by Moshe Rabbeinu, ultimately for a different reason. What's the difference? We'll say a very beautiful Gemara over here. Dom Rav Shlomo Bar Nachmani, I'm Rav Yonasan. My dichsev yichi Ruvain va'al yamos v'hi misav mispar v'zos li Yehuda. So we'll say, what's the meaning of the pasuk? Ultimately, again, Ruvain will live and he will not die. V'hi misav mispar, and his offspring will be numerous. V'zos li Yehuda. And literally translated, it sounds like it's saying, and this is because of Yehuda. What's the pshat? So this is actually a very beautiful Gemara. All the entire 40 years that Klal Yisrael were in the desert. Remember again, Rashi points out over here that when our ancestors left Egypt, they took the remains of the Shvatim with them. Remember again, the Shvatim all died in Egypt, and ultimately, again, were left in Egypt, right? They were not taken for burial in Eretz Yisrael immediately. When we left Egypt, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we took the remains of all of the Shvatim, all of the tribes with us. So we'll say, this is incredible Gemara. So what happened? All the years in the desert, the remains of Yehuda were like rattling around inside of their coffin. Ad Sheba Moshe Ubikesh Rachamim. Moshe Rabbeinu came and he davened for divine compassion upon Yehuda. Amar the father of Ribono Shalom, Mi Garam the Ruvain Shiyoda, who caused Ruvain to admit his transgression? Now we'll say, what was the transgression ultimately of Ruvain? He moved around his bed, father's bed, right? After Leah Imenu died, after Rachel died, ultimately again Yaakov moved his bed into the tent of one of the maidservants. Ruvain felt it was a terrible affront to his mother. See, he took unilateral action and moved his father's bed into the tent of Leah. Well, that was an Avera. So who caused Ruvain to admit his sin? It was Yehuda. But say, when Yehuda admitted after the episode of Tamar, right? Remember again, Tamar says, Tamar did not want to publicly embarrass her father-in-law. So instead, what does she say? Whoever is the owner of this staff, this signet ring, this is the father of my child. Yehuda says, Sad kamimeni. Obviously, this is a righteous woman. And he admits that the pregnancy, right, that Tamar is pregnant by him. When Yehuda does this, it inspires Ruvain to admit his sin as well. Miad, Shama Hashem kol Yehuda, al avera l'shafa. Right, so we'll say, so what happens? So Moshe Rabbeinu defends Yehuda, so to speak. When he makes this mention of Yehuda, ultimately again, the bones, right? Yehuda's remains, the bones go into their sockets and stop rattling around the coffin. Lo haya kamaski l'misifta derekia. But say, here was the problem. They would not admit Yehuda's neshama into the yeshiva shalmala, into the celestial yeshiva. Okay, so ve'elamot tivienu. So ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu davens for him again, allow him to come to his nation. Lo haviyada ma'ika amri rabbanon ulemishkal umitrach bahadi rabbanon. So we'll say first the widest line on the bottom. So now they allowed Yehuda entry into the yeshiva shalmala, but he was unable to engage in the halachic discourse. with the other neshamas that were there, right? He did not know how to engage with them. So, Yadav Rav Lo. So again, Abosai, the point over here is that Moshe Rabbeinu is davening for Yehuda with each of these steps, for each of these things. So Yehuda was unable, right, to resolve a sugi halacha l'maisi nishivo shamalo ve'ezer mitzarav tihya. So Rabbeinu, so the idea that the Gemara says over here is, now you understand why Moshe Rabbeinu repeated Yehuda's name. For everyone else, for the other five tribes, when Moshe Rabbeinu repeated their names, they were the weakest of the tribes. The repetition of the name was to gird them with additional strength. Yehuda's repetition of his name was not because he was weak. Rather, what did it represent? It represented the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven more for Yehuda than for the rest of the tribes. A really incredible Gemara. So we'll say the Gemara goes weiter. Amrali Rabba le Rava Bar Mari Minaha Mil Sadamri Yinshi. From where is this famous adage that people say, Basar Anya Azla Aniyusa? Poverty follows the poor. Where do you know this phrase from? Amrali Disnan Ashirin Mevian Bikurim Bekalso Shalzav Vishal Kesef Vaniyim Besalin Isarem Shal Arava Klufa Hasalim Vabikurim Nesun Lekohanim. So I say, where do you know it from? Rich people bring Bikurim, bring their first fruits, ultimately in baskets of gold and silver. And they go home with the baskets. The poor bring their bikurim ultimately again in baskets of reed baskets. And yet again, those baskets are kept by the Kohanim. So in other words, the poor have very little. And apparently again, poverty follows the poor. Incredible. So Amrle, Siddhi Gemara says, Amrle at Amrit Mehasam, you say it from there, from the Mishnah Mesechas Bikurim. So the Gemara says, Va'ana Amina Mehacha. I'll say Amit Beis. From where? The Tame Yikra. Ultimately, I will say, so this is by the Mitzora. Rashi points out, first Rashi in the Daf, Lo Dai Nigo. Not only ultimately again does he have tzaras, so the Gemara says, Ela Shemavayish Asma al Karcho Hitla Vakasa Chova. Yet I will say again, so not only is the Mitzora afflicted by tzaras, but what else? He has to be embarrassed that he walks around saying Tame. What's he saying? Tame. So I will say, really incredible Gemara, that poverty follows the poor. So I will say, so look, obviously the Gemara could just be describing just a general dynamic that poverty follows the poor. But say what it also, well, I think also on a deeper level, what it's highlighting is that sometimes when a person gets into a rut in life, it is very difficult for them to extricate themselves from it. We know this. Sometimes like when you begin to get into a rough patch, you look at yourself as like a loser, right? I'm the ani, right? I am the person. This is my mazel. This is who I am. And the moment that you begin to look at yourself as someone who is, quote-unquote, that loser in life, it's very difficult to extricate yourself from that. And it's very difficult, ultimately, to turn yourself around. Because so much of life is how you view yourself. You know, so when you walk around life saying, Tame Yikra, I am the guy who is the Tame. That's who I am. Well, again, if that's how you look at yourself, then we know, ultimately, what happens. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Often it's how you view yourself in life that dictates how the events of your life fundamentally unfold. Incredible. Let's go back to Amrali Rava the Rabbi Barmari. We'll say top line 92b. Amrali Rava the Rabbi Barmari. Minna Hamasam Rabbanon. From where is this concept that people say, that rabbis say, Hashkem ve'echo b'kayitz v'mne'achamo u'b'choref m'pne'atzina v'amri inshi shisin roti rot. So we'll say, okay, so apparently there was this adage. What's the adage? Get up early in the morning, and eat breakfast. That's essentially what this is, right? Get up early in the morning, literally again, in the summer, before the sun comes up. In the winter, right? In the winter, because, I should say it differently. In the summer, because of the intensity of the sun, and in the winter because of the intensity of the cold, and make sure to eat breakfast. Eat breakfast, right? Eat a good breakfast. And we'll say, if you eat a good breakfast, you know what people say? 60 people could run after you, and they'll never catch up with a guy who eats breakfast. Wow. Right? So apparently, extolling the power of breakfast. So we'll say, where do you get this from? The Chsiv, Lo yiravu v'lo yitzmo v'lo yakim shrav v'shemesh. Shabbat says, so the pasuk says, literally again, if you're not hungry, in other words, if you eat breakfast, right, and you're not thirsty, so you have breakfast in the morning, ultimately, again, neither the heat nor the cold will impact you. So you say from there, you're in a different pasuk. So the pasuk says, you shall serve Hashem your God. This refers to Kriyat Shema and davening. Oberach eslach lecha ve'esmeimecha. And Hashem will bless your bread and your water. Zu pas b'melach v'kiton shamayim. This refers to bread and salt, right? And a jug of water. So we'll say ultimately again, if you eat your bread with salt and your water, in other words, a basic breakfast of bread and water, mikan ve'elech v'asirosi machala mikerbecha. Ultimately, again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will remove any illness from your midst. The power of breakfast. V'tanya, machala zu mara. So we'll say, what is machala? What does it mean, illness? This refers to the gallbladder. V'lama nikra shma machala. So ultimately, again, we'll say, why is illness associated with the gallbladder called machala? Sheshmorim v'shalosh chalon yeshba. So we'll say, so apparently, machala v'gimatria hachi hava. So listen to this. There are 83 illnesses associated with the gallbladder. And this is actually associated with machala, right? Because machala, which is the name ultimately again for the gallbladder, or I should say it's the name for illnesses associated with the gallbladder, the gematria of machala is 83. So that's an allusion to the number of illnesses associated with the gallbladder. And I will say, all of the illnesses associated with the gallbladder, a good breakfast could take care of. All right? So we'll say, again, what is this? Right? We'll say, this is like a lot of Talmudic real estate, right? For this interesting idea about the power of a good breakfast. So we'll say, so what's the pshat? So I think there's two pieces over here. Number one, I will say, the power of Torah is that, you know, I was supposed to say, you think to yourself, like, do we need an entire limud? Like, do I need like a pasuk and all this stuff to teach you the power of a good breakfast? Okay, guys, what do they say? Breakfast is the most important meal. I don't know who came up with that, right? But lamaisa, why do I need a whole limud for this? Well, say the way we operate as Jews is, you see, I'm saying differently. The way the world works is perception creates reality, right? What is reality based on? Reality is based on what you see and what you take in. The Jew has understood that reality is not based on what you see. Why? Because if you base reality on what you see, remember, whatever it is that you see, goes back to yesterday, by definition, whatever you see has an inherent bias. Because you're seeing through your eyes. And your vision is ultimately, again, colored by your life experiences. So if reality is based on what you see, then that is potentially a tainted reality. So for a Jew, how is reality created? Reality is forged through Torah. That's how reality is forged. So how do I know that breakfast is an important meal of the day? How do I know that? Because the Torah tells me that. Because I have psukim to highlight that. Torah creates my reality. And I will say, this is such an important yisod. This is why, like, you know, we see this, like, Today, right, reality, right, and just in our society. So what's real and what's true often feel, it's so corrupted, right? It's so corrupted by what people think and what people feel and what people this and what people that. We don't fall prey to that. That's not us. For us, reality is not determined by what people feel or what people think. Reality for us is determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by Torah. So how do I know? And it sounds so strange, right? How do I know that breakfast is the most important meal of the day? How do I know that? Or that a breakfast puts you on the right path? How do I know that? I have psukim. You can't figure that out on your own? No, I can't figure that out on my own. Ultimately, Torah creates my reality. I will say, it's the most, and this is what allows us to stay strong, so that even when we find ourselves like bombarded by all of the different isms and all of the different movements and all of the different this and all of the different that. So we'll say those things come and go. We see it, right? They just come and go. We are able to stay strong because our realities are not defined by people's feelings or by people's perceptions or by people's affiliations with things. Our realities are only fundamentally determined by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's lesson number one. Lesson number one, say, what's the power of a good breakfast? What's the power of a good breakfast? It's also like Chazal teaching us, we want to say that how you start your day, fundamentally shapes and changes the rest of your day. And I will say, I don't have to tell that to this group over here, because there's only one reason why we wake up at ungodly hours. Although the Chevron Eretz Yisrael and Reb Jerry in England, you don't get the same credit for this, right? Because again, you guys are very well rested while you're listening to this year. But the Chevron Eretz Yisrael say, so what we know, right? Waking up at an ungodly hour in the morning, why? Why? I could do this so much better a little bit later in the day. Because I'm about to say, there's a power to sleep deprivation. And no, it's not just that you walk through your day like a zombie, right? The power of sleep deprivation, I'm about to say, is I am getting my day started in a particular way. It's not just about learning, I'm about to say. It's not just about learning. It's about a spiritual breakfast. It's about the idea that how you start your day fundamentally frames how the rest of it is going to unfold. And that's what the Gemara says. You start your day with a powerful breakfast, 60 people can't catch up with you. We'll say, it's not just true with your physical breakfast, right? Which is true, because I'll tell us, it's true with your spiritual breakfast as well. You start your day with a healthy dose of spirituality that propels you forward for the rest of the day. And people who don't have that breakfast, they'll never catch up with you. Incredible, incredible yisur that Chazal trying to teach us. Let's go weiter. I don't want to blow my lead over here, right? Let's go weiter. Amalei Rava the Rava Bar Mari. Menaham Mel. So we'll say, from right away, know this concept. Dam Rabbanan's rabbi say, this is incredible Gemara. Chavrucha Karyach Chamra. If your friend calls you a donkey, Uchpa Legabech Mush. Put a saddle on your back. Wow. Which I will say, in other words, if a person, right, your friend calls you a donkey, so essentially bray, that's what you should do, right? Put a saddle on your back. And I will say, now, what does this mean? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Uch pach legabe mush, third line down from the top, kilomar, tol okov shalchamor, vesirua elecha, vesimos al gabecha, kilomar, hoda ledvara vialtaneo. Someone calls you a donkey, what should you do? Say? So literally it says, put a saddle on your back. It doesn't literally mean put a saddle on your back. What it means is, say, okay, don't get into it. In other words, someone insults you, don't respond. Don't respond. Just accept it and move on. Where do you know this from? Amar Lei Dechsev, Vayomar Hagar Shifchas Sarai, Emi Zebas Va'anatelchi. So I'll say, this is incredible. When Hagar ran away, right? Well, when Hagar ran away, ultimately from the house of Sarai. So what happens? So the Malach encounters Hagar, and the Malach calls her Hagar, the maidservant of Sarai. Now remember again, at this point in time, Hagar ran away. So Hagar wasn't a maidservant. Yet the Malach calls her a maidservant. And I will say ultimately again, Vatomer, she responds, Mipnei Sarai Gevirti Anochi Borachas. Hagar responds and she says, I'm running away from my mistress from Sarai. Now remember, Hagar, technically speaking, wasn't the Shifcha. She wasn't the maidservant then. The Malach calls her a maidservant. It's quote unquote an insult. And what does Hagar do? She rolls with it. Yeah, I'm running away from my mistress. I'm running away from my master, from Sarai. So we'll say, so what an incredible Gemara. What an incredible, we'll say, how much better off we would be in life if we followed this advice. Someone insults you. So we'll say again, so what's our reflexive reaction? Response. And we all know what happens when you respond. Oh, now we're in it. Right? Now we're in it. And I will say, now what happens? So now again, now there's a whole process, right? So now again, I responded. Now the other person is going to respond. Now I'm going to respond. I will say, and by the way, this is 10 times more compounded now that you can actually spar with people over social media as well, right? Why? Because now I will say, I could just do this even while I'm on a Zoom meeting, right? So again, right? So I'm doing work. And yet I'm still fighting with 15 people, right? Because again, I could fire off an emoji. Is there a fighting emoji? There must be a fighting emoji. Right? So I'd say I could fire off a whole bunch of stuff. But saying, when someone insults you, move on with your life. Move on with your life. Someone offends you, right? Someone calls you the donkey, put on the saddle and just move on. Just move on. Don't engage. And when you live a life of non-engagement with people who insult or disparage, Jose, besides the fact that you're taking the high road, you're going to have all of this additional time in life. It's incredible. Amalei. Good. Amalei Rava le Rava bar Mari. Minacha Milsa. From where do we know this thing, the Amri Inch that people say? Milsa Gana'a de Ispech Kadim Amra. Jose, it's incredible, Gimara. Jose, if there is something disparaging about you, something negative about you, make sure to say it before anyone else says it. In other words, if you have a fault, you have a fault of saying disparaging, say it before anyone else can. So we'll say, where do we see this from? I'm like, say, Vayomer Eved Avraham Anochi. We'll say, Parshas Chayisar, when Eliezer is in the house of Lavan and Besuel, Besuel and Lavan, right? And he comes to get a wife for Yitzchak, so when he introduces himself, what does he say? I'm an Eved. I'm an Eved. So the Gemara understands that to mean that he's putting it out there, that he's an Eved. In other words, this is something about me. I'm not going to wait for someone else to put it out. We'll say, so what is this? But this is ultimately, as the Gemara telling us, that there's no need. All of us have deficiencies, and all of us have things about ourselves that ultimately, again, we're not proud of. So the idea is, don't hide them. Don't try to pretend like they don't exist. Why? Because we'll say, at some point in time, everyone becomes aware of everyone else's faults. If you pretend them away, then ultimately, again, all it does is create more embarrassment when it comes out. Now, I don't think the Gemara literally means that you have to go ahead, hi, Shalom Aleichem, Shmuel Silber, nice to meet you. Let me tell you my faults, right? Let's get this out of the way. Right? I don't think Gemara is saying that. What the Gemara is saying over here is we'll say, we spend so much time trying to go ahead and hide our deficiencies and pretend like they don't exist. Instead, there's a better way to live. The better way to live is acknowledge them. The better way to live is own them. The better way to live is don't try to pretend them away, because it never works. It never works. Again, lav dafka, you have to go ahead and literally tell them to the world, but at least to yourself. Be in complete cognition, be in complete awareness of what's broken, of what's deficient, of what's not working. Where is this thing that people say? Shafil va'azil bar avza ve'enei mitayfei. So let's listen to this. The goose, its eyes are very low, but it sees very far. What is that expression? We'll say, so Rashi says over here, Rashi says, Shafil va'azil kolomar machmas an v'sanuso shal adam lo yehe bosh mi lishol davar atzarech lo bein Torah bein leparnasav litboa chovo. So I'm sorry, ve'enei mitayfei, enei mitzapos lamala me'rachok l'mizonosav v'chavrosav. So we'll say, so what is this meaning, this phrase over here, that on one hand, the goose, right, or the duck, goose, right? What happens? It's ultimately, it walks with humility, but ultimately, again, it's able to see very far. So Rashi understands this to mean this dual thing. On one hand, it's humble, but when it needs something, it's able to ask. Amar lei dechsev, v'heitiv Hashem la'adoni, v'zacharta es amasecha. Right? Amar by Avigail. Amar lei Rava, so the idea over here is that sometimes in life, a person has to have a sense of humility, but at the same time, also has to be able to have the ability to ask for what it is that they need in life. Incredible. Amar lei Rava l'Rava bar Mari, minah ha'melsa d'amri yinshi, shisin tichli mitaya l'kaba d'kal chavri shama v'lo achal. So literally translated, we'll say, that people say, shisin tichli mitaya l'kaba. There are 60 forms of pain that afflict the tooth, that hear someone else eating, but it itself can't eat. Right? So the literal translation seems to be that if you hear someone else enjoying the meal and you can't partake, that causes you pain. Let's say what it also means is that sometimes in life it is natural when you see someone else have something and you don't have it and you want it, it causes you pain. They both say, we know this already. Where do we know this from? Because the Torah has to tell us the six parasha. Not just six parasha. What does the Torah say? Lo sachmot, you can't covet. They both said, the cloud gadol is whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you you can't do. What does that by definition mean? That you have a desire for it. So if the Torah tells you don't covet, what that automatically means is, I covet everything. So therefore, again, Gemara says, it's normal. It's normal, by the way. They both say, now what does don't covet mean? When the Torah says losach mode, see, both say, what's the prohibition? The prohibition is never to feel a sense of jealousy. No. What it means is, When you feel jealous, what does it mean? Shut it down. You got to work that through. In other words, sometimes you can't control the feelings that come upon you. But what I then can control is what I do with those feelings. That's what Vosachmor is. Kadosh Baruch Hu can't say, don't covet, don't be jealous. I'm a human being. That's what the Gemara is saying. It's normal that when your friend is eating something and you're hungry, that your teeth are going to ache. Okay. Whatever. A belly. I don't know what that means on a dental level, right? Or Jacob, you know, the dentist will tell us again what exactly this means on a dental level. But at the end of the day, what it means on a human level is, it's normal to be jealous of people when they have something, right? The tooth aches. I see someone else having a nice meal. I'm hungry. The tooth aches. And we'll say, but then what's my avoda? See, you have two choices. Choice number one is allow the ache to continue, right? Or work it through. Work it through. I can't control how I initially feel, but I absolutely can control how that feeling perpetuates itself. So what's about David HaMelech? These other people talking about that the Adonio ben Chagis did not invite them to his suda. You say it from there, I say it from here. This is incredible. Vayikach es Rivka batilo li shavayavar vayavar. What's a third wide line? Parshas Chayisara. So remember, Yitzchak Avinu marries Rivka. He brings her into Sarah's tent, and he loved her. And we'll say, what does it say afterwards? Vaynachim Yitzchak achareimo. Yitzchak was consoled for the loss of his mother. Uksiv basrei vayosef Avraham vayikach isho shma kitura. We'll say this is fascinating. Right after Yitzchak married, Avraham Avinu remarried. So the Gemara says, why the juxtaposition? This is incredible. So Avram saw the companionship that his son now enjoyed. And what happened? He ached for that companionship as well. So he got remarried. I will say, it's incredible. It's incredible. Now, again, just to point out over here, this is not a jealousy piece. This is not jealousy. So in this case over here, this is Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, again, had been without a wife before. Why didn't he remarry before? Because when he sees Yitzchak have this companionship, it's so profound. When he sees Yitzchak have this companionship, it awakens within him this desire for companionship as well. Incredible. And I would say, but bottom line, is that Aloha Lamaisa, you sometimes can't go ahead and help how you feel initially. I can't help if I'm jealous of someone while they're having that nice meal, when they have that nice car, when they have that nice house, that nice vacation, that nice marriage, all those different things. But Lamaisa, so how you feel initially, you may not be able to control. But how you allow that feeling to perpetuate itself, that's under your control. That's lo sachmo. That's our obligation. Amrali Rava the Rava Bar Mari. Minah Mos Ladamri. And she wears something that people say. Chamra Lamari Tivusa Lashake. So we'll say, what does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Chamra Lamari Vitivusa Lashake. Hayayin Shal Melech. Who Vashosin also Machzikin Tova Lasar Mashke. He'll say, it's great. So sometimes people drink the wine of the king, but their hakara satov is to the wine steward, right? So the wine steward, the saramashkim, he's pouring the wine. So everybody's giving him a tremendous shkoyach, right? Meanwhile, what? It's not his wine. It's the king's wine. But everyone is giving hakara satov ultimately again to the steward and not to the king. So the Gemara says, where is this concept from? The Gemara says, Amalei Dixiv, V'samachta es yadcha alav, L'man yishmu un v'iron kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Uksiv, V'yeshua b'nei Amalei Ruach Chochma, Ki samach Moshe es yadav alav, V'yishmu alav kol b'nei Yisrael. So I will say, it's interesting. When Moshe goes ahead and makes Yeshua, puts his hands on Yeshua, everyone kind of attributes Yeshua's greatness to Moshe's bracha. Meanwhile, it wasn't Moshe's bracha. Whose bracha was it? The Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll say, this is an incredible yisod, right? That people thank the wine steward for the wine, even though it belongs ultimately again to the king. They'll say, sometimes in life, we think that our bracha comes from other people, right? I'm in business. I've got a deal. The deal goes through. I have so much hakara satov to the other party to the deal. You should have hakara satov to that person. They'll say, but remember again, who did the bracha come from? The bracha came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Never forget that all bracha in life comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not coming from the guy on the other side of the table. No different than the fact that Yoshua's bracha didn't come from Moshe. Moshe was the conduit. But ultimately, again, where does the bracha come from? It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I will say, this is such a tremendous yisod in life. Things happen to us every single day. Good things and bad things. And they often come through people. But I will say, who does that? It's not, that person is just the kli. That person is just the kli. Ultimately, again, what's coming, what's happening to me in life, ultimately is coming to me through from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through a conduit of someone else. I will say, this is an incredible yisod. In bracha, I say, but I also want to point out something. Someone does something bad to me. Someone does something bad to me. And Rabbi Nachman writes about this. It is very important to know, when you are wronged by someone, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that thing to occur to you. He wanted that bad thing, that hurtful thing, that negative, he wanted it to occur to you. Now again, the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to occur to me does not absolve the perpetrator of what he or she did. They're still responsible. But so often what happens, Rabbi saying, somebody hurts me, somebody wrongs me, I get so angry at that person. Look what you did. What am I doing? I'm cutting HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the picture. So it's true. Reuven wronged me. Reuven wronged me. Okay. Reuven is a shaliach of Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this bad thing to occur to me. And it happened to Reuven. Reuven is responsible for hurting me. But sometimes all of the anger is directed towards Reuven without recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this to occur. We focus on the wine steward and we forget about the king. It is so incredibly important to always remember that the good events and the difficult events all come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the people who visit those circumstances upon us, they're just shluchim. They're just agents. They're just emissaries of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the end, so stop getting all caught up in the anger and animosity of people who hurt us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed this event to happen to me. And at the end of the day, this person was the shaliach. Don't spend your life being angry at the shaliach. Try to figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach me through this dramatic event. Incredible. So we'll say, where is this thing that people talk about? Kalba bekanfei gilali mivla. A dog that is starving will even eat stones. Will even eat stones. Okay? Where do you know this concept from? So the Gemara says, Dichsev nefesh seveya tavos nofes. The nefesh re'eva called mar masok. Okay, so we'll say so again. Much to say over here also. Rashi says, no Rashi. So then we're saying, oh, fine. So I'm really Rabba the Rabba, Bar Mari. So we'll say there's that idea that a starving dog will even eat stones. So we'll say has a lot of ramifications as well. That when a person is starved, whatever the starved thing is, ultimately, again, they will satiate themselves with whatever it is that is available. I will say, you know, you can even see this kind of like on a chinuch level. When a child is starved for attention, they'll take any attention they could get, even negative attention. Right? And sometimes it's so important as parents to recognize that when our children are acting out or acting in ways that they shouldn't be acting, is there something maybe missing? Is there something missing in the home life? Is there something missing in the relationship? Sometimes not. Sometimes children just act out for a variety of different reasons. But sometimes the dog that's starving, not to call your kid a dog, but sometimes, right, sometimes the dog that is starving will satiate itself with anything. All right, more to say on that, but let's go back to Amalei Rabba L'Rabba Bar Mari. V'nalos D'Ami Inshi. Metayo V'Azil Dik L'Bisha. Gabi Kina D'Sarchi. So we'll say sometimes a bad date palm will go ahead and situate itself by barren trees. Look at Rashi. Kina desarchi. Rashi says over here. Rashi says, Ilanos betelim vein osim pri, kimo gavra desarcha batal kolomar derech dekel ra, ligadlo betzat ilan srak. So sometimes again, ultimately again, a compromised date palm will grow by a barren tree. Rabbi says, so this seems to be reminiscent of the earlier lesson about like, Ayla Rasha, Ayla Shcheino. That when you put yourself by barren trees, by people who are producing nothing, even if you have the ability to produce something, your output, right, your spiritual output, is going to be compromised ultimately by your surroundings. So the Gemara says, "Amrlei, davar zeh kasa b'Torah, shanei b'nevim u'mushalash b'ksuvim." This lesson, we'll say, this is a big one. This is a big one. We'll say that if you are a date palm, which means you have the ability to produce beautiful things, but you put yourself in the wrong surroundings. You put yourself by barren trees. You surround yourself by people who are not aspiring for greatness. right? You put yourself by people who are not looking to grow, people who are not growth-oriented, ruchnius-oriented, then even if you have the ability to produce the most beautiful dates of ruchnius, you're going to produce nothing. So the Gemara says, this is such an important lesson. That's what? We learn it in the Torah. It's mentioned again in the Nevi'im. It's mentioned the third time in the Ksuvim. It's in the Mishnah. It's in the Braisa. So I'll say, in other words, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. This concept is so important that it is reinforced in every body of Torah. Ksiba Torah dechsiv vayilech Esav al Yishmo. So we'll say it says Esav unto Yishmo. So we'll say it's actually interesting. Esav, who had the ability to be a palm tree, right? Esav, who had the ability to be someone great, what did he do? He goes to Yishmo. Yishmo is the barren tree. The barren tree. So Esav, you go to a barren tree, you're not going to turn into anything. Shani ben Avim dechsiv vayislak to al yiftach anoshim reikim vi'imo. Right? Ultimately, again, these anashim reikim, these empty people went to Yiftach, and ultimately, again, they were with him. Meshulash b'ksuvim d'chsiv, kol of lemineo yishkon. Right? Every bird associates with its own kind. Ubnei adam ledomelo. So it's not mastisa, we learn this in the Mishnah. Kol mechubur letameh, tameh. Whatever, let's say, it's incredible. If anything that is tameh, that attaches itself to something else, ultimately, again, the other item becomes tameh as well. Kol mechubur letaratar, Vitanina bebraisa. Rabbi Lezer Omer, lo lechinam halach zarzil etzel orein elabim veishumino. So we'll say the zarzil, which is a type of bird, ultimately attaches itself to the raven, right? Why? Because just like the raven is tame, so ultimately again the zarze is tame as well. So we'll say profound lessons that when you attach yourself to something that is tame, you become tame as well. Amalei Rabba le Rabbi Bar Mari, minaham elzad amri inshi, karis chavrich velo ani, Rami Guda. So I'll say ultimately again, from where do we know the lesson? That ultimately again, if your friend calls out to you, actually what it's saying over here is, if you try to give someone Musar and they don't listen, throw the wall at them. Which is another way of saying that if you try to help someone and they don't listen to you, let it go. Let it go. You can't keep pursuing someone. Ultimately, again, now literally what it means is, let them fall into their own traps. So the Gemara says, Rami Guda Rabba Shadi Be. Amarle, Ya'an Tarasech, Falo Taharta Mitumasech, Lo Titari Od. So fine, suppose it quotes over here the Pasek, because you have not purified yourself from your impurities, you will not be purified anymore. We'll say, it's an incredible Yisod also. What is this teaching us? You can only help people to a degree. If a person doesn't want to help themselves, even the most incredible friend will not be able to tell. They'll say, last one. Amrle Rava, the Rava Bar Mari, Minaha Milsa, Da Amri Inshi, Bira Dishasis Mine Lo Tishadi Bekala. They'll say, from where do we know the adage where people say, a well that you drink from, don't throw dirt into that well? From Amrle Dichsiv, Lo Sisai Vedomi Ki Achichohu, do not afflict an Edomi because he is your brother. Lo tesayv mitzri ki ger hayiseh ba'artso. Ultimately, again, do not afflict a Mitzri because you were a stranger in his land. Rabbi said, now what does that mean? What does that mean on this level? What that means is like this. What does it mean not to throw a clod of dirt into a well that you drank from? What that means at the end of the day, Rabbi said, is if the well is giving you water, don't plug it up, right? Don't clog it up with dirt. Hakar satov. Hakar satov. At the end of the day, the Edomi is your brother. At the end of the day, the Mitzri, you lived in his land for 210 years. They mistreated you, but they're family. They mistreated you, but you lived in the land. Rabosai, the profound yisod that a Jew has to be makir tov, to always have gratitude for everything. Find one more, then we're really going to stop. The Gemara says like this, Amar le Rava, le Rava bar Mari, minah hamel sadami inshi, idalis dura dalina, v'ilo dalina. I'm really supposed to say, what does this mean? Rashi says over here, "In tidla v'tigba hamasoi imi dalina." If you help me carry the load, I'll carry it. But if you don't help me carry the load, ultimately, again, I'm not going to carry it. Where is this from? Dechsiv vayomer la Barak in telchi imi valachti v'imlo telchi imi lo elich. Barak says to Devorah, "If you go with me, I'll go to war against Sisra. If you don't go with me, I won't go to war." Rabosai, so what does this mean? At the end of the day, Rabosai, so I think the power of this is like this. If my friend has a problem, I'm willing to help. As long as you're willing to do the work as well. If you're not willing to work on your own problems, do not expect other people to work on them for you. Conversely, if you're willing to work on your problems, then ultimately there's no shortage of friends who are there to help you shoulder the load. Shkai, a good Narav Shabbos.